Christmas is over, but New Year has not yet arrived. And I think this is a really important Sunday. Every year I say the same, and every year I'm right. But genuinely, but this is an important Sunday because I do think it offers a really good glimpse to do two things. One, we look back at what's happened in probably a very busy week, and I think your lives have probably been very busy in the last week. You may have been away. You may have caught up with family. You may have had a quiet Christmas. You may have had a noisy Christmas. But hopefully, at least at some point in the last 2 or 3 weeks, you've thought about Jesus. At least. At least if you haven't been to church in years, at least you might be thinking, was that story true? Did he really come? Is history based around an event thousands of years ago? Is it really that significant, or is it a fairy tale? So this is a good time to look back, I think. But of course, as we are on the last Sunday of the year, it's also a brilliant time to look forward, because here we go shortly into a brand new year. And I don't know about you, but I like the freshness of turning over a new page and thinking, I wonder what the next 12 months is going to hold for me, my family, the church, my job. I mean, who knows? And I mean that nicely. Who on earth knows? Truth be told, you need to just hold everything so lightly. We should be grateful for 2019, I believe. There's been a lot of amazing blessings and opportunities and good things that have happened in the last 12 months. But equally, let's line ourselves up for what's coming next. We have been looking for a few weeks now at this teaching series called Hark, which of course means listen. And of course, hopefully we have been harking or listening. And as I looked at the Christmas story, as we've all been doing over the last few weeks, a couple of these characters came out, as they always do, Mary and Joseph and the shepherds and all that stuff. But it suddenly struck me as I was looking over the last week or so, this is a story about communication. Just think about how many times God turned up, either through an angel with a distinct instruction, or he controlled people's dreams, or he gave entire, I was going to say herds of angels, that's not the right phrase, is it? Hosts of angels. Why? Because he wanted to tell people something. This is an incredible story all about listening and hopefully following what God is saying. James, if we could just have a little click, please. Mary, it will come up in a sec, there we are, was visited by an angel. I don't know about you, but I have never been visited by an angel, certainly not anything that I'd recognize and go, ah, and then the angel would say, don't be afraid, Steve, everything's fine. But actually, Mary had a one-to-one encounter with a messenger from God. That's a major form of communication. Joseph had what? But it wasn't just one. 4 different dreams specifically telling him what he should do with his family and what he should not do in terms of directions. Now get up and move. No, don't go that way. Go this way. Really, really, 4 separate, distinct instructions. Not the kind of thing where you get up and think, oh, I've had too much cheese last night. But the kind of thing where you go, God just spoke to me with clarity, 100% conviction. I know that wasn't just a weird dream about something else. God spoke to me. And of course, Joseph acted. How many times? 4 times. The next person, Angel Gabriel. Now, to be fair to Angel Gabriel, he didn't have to listen to himself, but he was the bringer of the message. He was the carrier of God's message. What about the shepherds, though? The shepherds had angels visiting and spoke directly to them and sang to them. I'm not sure we sounded quite like angels this morning, but it was a nice sing-song. But again, how many other stories have you got? Communication after communication after communication. Loads. And then you've got the wise men. What communication did they have? They did have a star, but they were also warned in a dream not to go back to Herod. Now, Herod, I've put him on the list of characters because he is a main character. Whose voice did he listen to? His own voice. Bill, you and I are on the same wavelength today. He wasn't listening to God in the slightest. He had his own agenda. But this is still about people where God was intervening in their lives, interrupting and saying, yo, will you listen, please? Is that not what God said, Sarah? Okay, hark, will you listen, please? Now, here's my thought for the end of the year and the beginning of the year. How would the story have been different if they had chosen not to listen? What an interesting thought. As you read Mary's account. The angel does not say to Mary, "You are pregnant." If you look at the account, it actually says, or the angel says this, "You will conceive." So the conception hadn't happened when Mary had the instruction from the angel that says, "Your life is about to be forever changed." You see, I wonder whether that's not an inconsequential little detail there. If she was already pregnant, she couldn't have said no. Too late. Done deal. Whereas actually the angel said, "You will." And I wonder if she'd said, "Thanks, but no thanks." I wonder if the angel would have said, "Okay, then you get on with your life and we'll do something else." And I don't know. We will never know. Thankfully, she didn't say no thank you. But Mary, I do believe, was given that choice to say, I don't want to be part of this. But she didn't. Joseph, of course, had an easy out, really, on more than one occasion. He could have just walked away from the woman who, from every earthly indication, had been with another guy and got pregnant by another guy. But Joseph was such a man of integrity, an incredible example to not just the blokes in the room, but men and women, because he was so brave, full of courage. He acted. But what if he'd said, "Not a chance," to the dream? "I am not going to take that whore to be my wife." Because that's, come on, let's be honest about this. These are human beings. They're not just, you know, cartoon characters. I'll admit, I'm not Joseph, but if I'd had a dream and was told to do something as crazy as take a woman that had supposedly was going to be loyal to me when we got married, and she was pregnant, my human instinct is not going to be, "Yes, of course, that's not a problem." I tell you, I'm going to have a major problem with that. And I don't know which way my conclusion would come out. I'm being honest with you this morning. So Joseph, if he had said thanks but no thanks, the story would have turned out very different. And by the way, not just once. 4 different times he had to act. Because the other dreams that he had were things like, don't go back that way because Herod's going to kill you. Don't go back to this one because actually Herod's died, but now the new person is worse than Herod. Don't go back there, go off to Nazareth. 4 different instructions, like a sat nav. Turn left, change direction. But how many of us ignore the sat nav, Ruth? Do you ignore the sat nav? You don't ignore the sat nav. You don't use one. We have a new sat nav in our family, and we're trying to figure out how to use it. But one thing I have done is I've programmed home. Okay? I've programmed home. But Joseph listened to 4 supernatural communications and acted every time. How would the story have been different if he'd said, "Nah, I don't want to go back to Nazareth. I want to go back to Judea, where I came from"? Guess what? The waiting armies would have killed him, his family, and Jesus. Am I being too dramatic? I don't think I am, because actually Herod was a tyrant, and the person that replaced him was even worse. Absolutely paranoid about killing Jesus. And if we believe the story, actually he killed lots of children trying to kill Jesus. He was not a nice guy. Come on, let's stop sanitizing this. He was like a dictator stroke murderer. That's how bad that guy was. And if Joseph hadn't have listened to the very specific instructions, the story would not have turned out the way it did. The shepherds, the passage tells us that they were told, they said to each other, let's go to Bethlehem, let's see what this thing is, see where it has happened. Then, which the Lord has told us about. So they listened and then they followed instructions. But then this is interesting. So they hurried off. So they didn't just have a meeting about it. They hurried off, found Mary and Joseph, who was with the baby lying in the manger. When they had seen him, they then set about spreading the word concerning what they had been seen and told about this child. All who heard it from them were amazed at what the shepherds said. So if the shepherds hadn't have followed the instructions, go and tell, go and see, go and tell, then we don't know how the history books may have been changed, because it's about people knowing the significance of what has happened. The shepherds carried that to the people and beyond. And the Magi, of course, if they had not listened to the dream, which said, don't go back to Herod, he's a nutcase. If they hadn't have listened to that, then they may have gone back to Herod and said, guess where Jesus is? He's over there. And then Herod would have gone with his armies and killed Jesus. It's very straightforward to think what the consequences would be. So as we are wrapping up our thoughts on listening to God, this is a story full of people who listened. But this morning I want to add another character who we often forget about is part of the Christmas story. So starting in Luke chapter 1, I'm just going to read, it's going to come up behind me, but I'm going to read part of the Christmas story, which again, you may have heard it, but it's really quite important. Here we go. In the time of Herod, king of Judea, there was a priest named Zechariah who belonged to the priestly division of Abijah. His wife Elizabeth was also a descendant of Aaron. Both of them were righteous in the sight of God, observing all the Lord's commands and decrees blamelessly. But they were childless, because Elizabeth was not able to conceive, and they were both very old. Once, when Zechariah's division was on duty and he was serving as a priest before God, he was chosen by lot, according to the custom of the priesthood, to go into the temple of the Lord and burn incense. When the time came for the burning of the incense, all the assembled worshippers were praying outside. And then an angel of the Lord appeared to him, standing at the right side of the altar of incense. When Zechariah saw him, that's the angel, he was startled and was gripped with fear. Wouldn't we all be? Yes, so he's a totally understandable human being here. But the angel said to him, "Do not be afraid, Zechariah. Your prayer has been heard. Your wife Elizabeth will bear you a son, and you are to call him John. He will be a joy and a delight to you, and many will rejoice because of his birth. For he will be great in the sight of the Lord. He is never to take wine or other fermented drink, and he will be filled with the Holy Spirit even before he is born. He will bring back many of the people of Israel to the Lord their God, and he will go on before the Lord in the spirit and power of Elijah to turn the hearts of the parents to their children and the disobedient to the wisdom of the righteous, to make ready a people prepared for the Lord." Wow, that's quite a detailed communication from an angel. Zechariah asked the angel, "How can I be sure of this? I'm an old man and my wife is well along in years." The angel said to him, "I am Gabriel." Now, the reason I raised my voice there is that there is an exclamation mark in the text. So it isn't, Zechariah said, "How can I be sure of it? I don't trust you very much." And the angel said, "Well, I am Gabriel, really." It isn't this mealy-mouthed kind of response. Gabriel says, "I stand in the presence of God, and I have been sent to speak to you and to tell you this good news. And now you will shut your mouth and not be able to speak until the day that this happens, because you did not listen and believe my words, which will come true at their appointed time." Wow. One of the characters in the Nativity story, and we'll see how this links in just a second, didn't really listen and believe like that. Zechariah had a response that seemed to get a rather firm reaction from the angel. And even if you think I'm hamming it up a little bit, the truth is the angel said, "You're going to be struck dumb because of your unbelief. You didn't listen, you didn't believe." So there was something in his response, Zechariah's response, which was not coming from a place of optimism or hope or faith. So now we're going to compare this to Mary's story, okay? In the 6th month of Elizabeth's pregnancy, oh look, guess what? She's pregnant and old. In the 6th month of Elizabeth's pregnancy, God sent the angel Gabriel to Nazareth, a town in Galilee, to a virgin pledged to be married to a man named Joseph, a descendant of David. The virgin's name was Mary. The angel went to her and said, "Greetings, you who are highly favored. The Lord is with you." Mary was greatly troubled at his words and wondered what kind of greeting this might be. Now, by the way, there's a lot of parallels here, aren't there? So Zechariah, his gut reaction was, "Oh, I'm afraid." And Mary's reaction was, "Oh, I'm afraid." But the angel said to Mary, "Do not be afraid. You have found favor with God. You will," there we are, look, not "you have conceived." "You will conceive and give birth to a son, and you are to call him Jesus. He will be great and will be called the Son of the Most High. The Lord God will give him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over Jacob's descendants forever. His kingdom will never end." "How will this be?" Mary asked the angel, "since I'm a virgin." Now this is interesting because, to be fair to Zechariah, he had a question, and the angel reacted quite badly to his question and ended up making him dumb. Mary had a question, "How will this be, since I'm a virgin?" But the angel's response is different. The angel answered, "The Holy Spirit will come on you, and the power of the Most High will overshadow you. So the Holy One to be born will be called the Son of God. even Elizabeth, your relative, there we are, they're related, is going to have a child in her old age. And she, who was said to be unable to conceive, is now in her sixth month. For no word from God will ever fail. I am the Lord's servant, Mary answered. May your word to me be fulfilled. And then the angel left her. So we have two similar accounts, an angel giving supernatural communication, but somehow the angel gets ratty with Zechariah because he had a question, but the angel is happy and just gives more detail to Mary when she has a question. So what I did this week, in between building Lego and other bits of fun, was I thought we'd have a look at actually the details of what they said and what the actual Greek words are, okay? Because I think that sometimes English runs a little bit empty in terms of detail. And the fact that we say something in English, it doesn't necessarily reflect where it's coming from in the language they would have spoken. So we're going to look at, I've got the screen coming up now, James, with two halves. I've got Zechariah on the left. He said, in response to that quite detailed stuff from an angel, how can I be sure? I am old and my wife is old. That's a fair question. But then Mary said, how will this be? I'm a virgin. Two questions, and they don't sound too different at first glance. On Zechariah's side, the language for can I be sure, the word in Greek is ginosko. It is not about the future. It's not saying what's going to happen then. It's actually a current tense word. In other words, it's about me now. When he said, how can I be sure, what he's actually saying is, I want to know that I can believe you. I distrust what you're telling me. Now, that's a really important difference, because I don't think Mary's question was filled with distrust or suspicion. Would you agree? We'll look at that in a second. We'll look at the Greek for hers. But actually, Zechariah, the underlying motive behind his question was not, well, how is this going to be? But, yeah, right, how are you going to make that happen? And there's a different attitude, there's a different motive that we need to understand. My suggestion to you is that's why the angel reacted rather differently. Because Zechariah was saying, I distrust, or I need more proof. I don't know that I believe you. Mary, of course, said a similar question, didn't have the word I in it. She said, how will this be? The Greek for the way that she asked the question, how will this be, is ezomahi. Mary's question was based on a different Greek word, esomahi, which is, it shall be in the future. So her actual question had a very different heart reaction, I suppose you'd say. She was saying, so how is that going to happen? I trust you, but how? Whereas Zechariah is, I don't trust you, and I need you to prove it to me. And of course, what we have is two very different reactions from the angels. Now, if we read on in verse 73, on Zechariah's side, his motive actually is revealed even more, because there's this thing called Zechariah's song. Zechariah, actually, when he does eventually get to speak, which of course is months later, he says a lot of stuff. But one of the phrases is this: the God of Israel has raised up a horn of salvation for us to enable us to serve him without fear. So he references the fear that he had at the time of the message. That's something that we read in verse 73. Now, later on, Mary's song, as we call it, she says that God's mercy extends to those who fear him. So both Zechariah's response, which was suspicious and untrusting, still had an element of fear. Mary's, which was trusting but wanted to know how it's going to happen, had a different kind of fear. Fear of the Lord. And so my question to us today is, if God was to appear to us or speak to us in a dream or bring us something that we know deep down in our gut, this is God speaking to me, are we afraid of what God might do if we just say, nah, don't want that, thanks very much, I'll do things my own way? Do we have enough fear, holy fear, good fear of God and the fact that he is awesome? Do we have that understanding? Or have we shrunk God to, well, he's not going to mind if I just say no? Do you see what I mean? A fear of God says he is awesome. He is the God that put our entire universe together. He is ultimately the most majestic creature I can ever understand. He's giving me a job to do, or he's giving me a mandate or something to get done in life. How dare I say, nah, I don't believe you. And this is our challenge for the end of 2019. Has God said something to you, either this year, maybe even a few years ago? And have we let it go? Have we said, I'm not going to worry about it. Nah, I want to go and do something else. Or do we have Mary's attitude, saying, do you know, I have such a reverence for God that if he's given me a job to do, if I've been chosen to set up this ministry, if I've been chosen to sort out that problem in my family, if I've been chosen to do this or get involved at church or whatever, or reach out to my neighbors or just change my job because that puts me in the right place for my career, if he's giving me an instruction, I'm so privileged to have that instruction, I'm certainly going to listen. I'm going to hark. I want to talk to you about someone who you would recognize. His name is Mike Pilavachi. Now, you may not have met Mike. I have met Mike. He's a nice guy. Some of us in the church have had links with him and Soul Survivor over the years. He's a nice guy. I just want to read out. This is some information on him. Mike Pilavachi is the senior pastor of the Soul Survivor Watford Church based in North Watford, which he set up in 1993 along with worship leader Matt Redman, a former accountant. Now, I didn't know that about Mike, I must admit, but he was a former accountant. He became a youth worker at St. Andrew's C of E Church in Chorley Wood, Hertfordshire. Pilavachi helped run the international evangelistic event Soul in the City London in 2004 and Soul in the City Durban in 2009. He was also one of the founders of Hope 08 Project, an initiative of the Churches of Britain and Ireland, which is helping to demonstrate Christian faith in action. He was ordained deacon in the Church of England at St. Albans Abbey on the 1st of July 2012. Mike Pilavachi launched Soul Survivor in the summer of 1993. The event is a five-day-long charismatic Christian festival aimed at youth, and the initial Soul Survivor attracted over 1,800 delegates. Under the guidance of Mike Pilavachi, the event has grown to accommodate around 30,000 people over 4 weeks. In May 2018, Pilavachi announced that the Soul Survivor Conference would be ending after the summer events of 2019, which of course finished this year. Yesterday, it was announced in the New Year's Honours List that Mike Pilavachi would be receiving an MBE for services to young people. How cool is that? That's really, really good. And that happened yesterday. Now, let me just say, I have chatted to him through links of churches over the years. I don't agree with everything he says or does by quite a long way. But that little bio I just read shows a man who has dedicated his life to following what God gave him as a challenge to reach young people in the UK. And I think we can probably agree he has been successful at reaching young people. And like I say, different methods, different approaches, and that's fine. But wow, a man that has given his entire life to follow a call that he had when he was a teenager himself. So he heard, or harked, if you like, a call on his life from God to do something. And rather than saying, nah, it's a bit inconvenient, really. I quite fancy living life my way. Here he is now at the, I won't say the end of his ministry, because he's still the church pastor and still building church, but certainly Soul Survivor, which he's well known for. The format of that certainly is coming to an end. But it's great that he's being recognized by our country for the amount of energy and effort that he's consistently put in response to God's call on his life. I want to finish with a story, a personal story of a friend of mine. Many years ago, a friend of mine came to me and said, God has spoken to me, Steve. And I said, great. He'd been really soul-searching for many months, and he said, God has told me to build a ministry in the Forest of Dean. And I said, fantastic. And so he said, I want you to pray for me, and I want you to hold me accountable to make sure that I do it. I wasn't alone. There was another church pastor at the time as well, the two of us, and he asked the two of us to hold him accountable for this. And I said, well, if you're serious, and we prayed with him at length, and we said, right, let's go then. What are you going to do? And we put a little plan together for him to get him started, and he was going to build this ministry around the Forest of Dean. And about a year later, I saw him with the other pastor, and we said, so how's it gone? Well, I've been a bit busy. And work's got a bit busy, so I actually haven't really done anything at all. And this is totally true. And I said, okay, what would you like me to say? And he said, well, I'd like you to say you need to get back on with it because you haven't really done enough in the last 12 months. And I said, well, okay then, you need to get back on with it because you haven't really done enough in the last 12 months. And he said, will you pray for me again? And I said, of course. And this is, like I say, this other chap as well. So we prayed for him, but we prayed with a slightly different slant, if I'm honest. We prayed that he might have the courage to follow through on what he knew jolly well God had told him to do. Are you with me? 6 months later, we caught up again. And I said, so how are we doing? Work's got even busier. And I said, are you going to tell me that you haven't done anything? And he said, no. I've been invited to preach at some churches on Sundays around the forest. So I said, okay. And he said, so I haven't had enough time to do the ministry because I've been doing what these other churches have asked me to do. And so I said, so let me get this right. So you filled what time you had with something that God didn't ask you to do, and you've still neglected the thing that God asked you to do. And he said, well, you don't have to put it like that. And I said, but you asked me to hold you accountable, and I'm not being horrible, and I'm not a horrible person. I think you know me well enough. But I thought, there's no point in fluffing about saying you're doing a great job when you actually haven't done the thing that God has asked you to do. And by the way, I'm simplifying this, but the discussion about when he was going to preach at other churches, that wasn't because he felt particularly called. It was just he felt sorry for them because they had gaps in their speaking rota. So there's a difference. You see, the motive is different. And long story short, it was about another year again, and we met up as a trio, and obviously the question was, so you've had almost 2 years now since you said to us, God has clearly called me. I know what my purpose is for the next few years. We've had 2 years. What have you done? And guess what the answer is? Absolutely nothing. And so he said, will you pray for me? And I said, no. And he said, I don't understand. That's not very Christian of you. And I said, well, what would you like me to pray? Pray that God gives you yet another sign that you'll ignore. You know, I'm not trying to be unpleasant, but I'm trying to be honest. If God has spoken so clearly to us and we can't be bothered to listen, what are we going to do? Keep praying that God gives another sign and another sign? What, you know, come on. If we have a holy reverence for who God is, how dare we just faff about wasting life and finding other things to fill our time with and then wanting me to come and pray for him? I did actually pray for him in the end, and I prayed that he'd put his finger out. I didn't pray that God would give him another sign. I'm not doing that. But I just prayed that he'd finally grow a pair and do the right thing. And he never did. The ministry, this is a 10-year-old story. Ministry never, ever got started. And at the end of the meeting, both the other pastor and myself, we were asked to cease the accountability relationship. That sounds a dramatic story, but I wanted to highlight, you've got Mike Pilavachi, at some level, brave, in some level, reckless, in some level, I haven't got a clue how to do this, but I'm going to do something because God's told me what to do. On the other hand, my friend, the need is still going unmet. He just didn't want to do it. The Christmas story is filled with God's communication. But I don't want us this morning, as I wrap this up, I don't want us to go into 2020 going, God, will you speak so clearly to me? I need an angel, you know, dancing in my car or something. Because actually, what I feel, and you can come and speak to me afterwards as much as you like, I feel God has spoken to lots of us in lots of different ways over the years. And I know that from personal experience, because some of you have shared that with me. Some of you have said, God's really challenged me to reprioritize my time. And I've said, great, I will pray with you, I'll join you in whatever you need to reprioritize. And then a year goes by, and then the person goes, I really need to reprioritize my time. And I'm thinking, you know that, because 2 years ago you told me God had told you to do that. And yet we're not grasping the nettle. We're not taking seriously what God has already said. And we can have prayer meetings. I'm not anti-prayer, okay? We can have prayer meetings. But we need to be praying for the right things. And praying for courage and boldness. And maybe some friends to come alongside us to help us see that thing through. We don't need to be praying, oh Lord, give us a sign. He's given you 100 already. How is 2020 going to differ from 2019 unless our response to that message changes? So looking back, my question as we finish, What has God spoken to you about previously? Has he asked you to start something? Has he asked you to stop something? Just as powerful. Has he asked you to work on something? In your character, in your family, in your business, I don't know. Has he asked you to work on something? Has he asked you to rearrange or reprioritize something? Many of you I know have had a sense of calling. God has pointed you and said, go there, do that, spend more time on that. And I know some people have been brave and started things, and that's great. And others have been reluctant and just said, too much cost, too much inconvenience, too much hassle. And going forward then, into 2020, my question is, are you going to hark? Are we going to hark? Or are we going to hark not? So with respect, can we go into 2020 saying, okay, whatever God has said, whatever God will continue to say, I'm going to choose to listen. I'm going to choose to roll my sleeves up bravely and say, okay, how does this happen? You're allowed to question. We're allowed to question. Mary questioned. But that question came out of, how is that going to be in the future? Not, I need more evidence, and until I get it, I'm not going to pretend God has spoken to me. We can have purposeful, fulfilled lives. We can see the kind of impact that Mike Pilavachi has seen and more if we will listen to God and follow his instructions for our life and our church. Amen. Amen.